There are so many issues throughout all levels of government that smart Christians need to view it as a way to care for our neighbor by making good decisions.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation with her husband, Mark, at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The federal government has gotten much more involved in family formation or family destruction, abortion, other issues. And there are so many ways in which it's important for us to think about how we can defend the weak and vulnerable among us by making good decisions.
You can watch journalists Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at this year's Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes the ability to watch a live stream and a recording. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Tuesday, July the 7th, we'll be talking slavery and contemporary calls for social justice. How well do we know the history of, say, the founding fathers on the issue of slavery? We know that many of them were ambivalent, but they were also slaveholders. Do we know if they took any concrete steps, even at the founding of the country, to undermine the institution of slavery? Maybe it would take decades or practically 100 years, but did they foresee a time when the United States could no longer bear the yoke of slavery and the moral imposition on our very founding ideas, like all men are created equal? Joining us to talk about slavery and contemporary calls for social justice, Hadley Arkus. He's professor emeritus of jurisprudence and American institutions at Amherst College, founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding. He's architect of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act and author of several books, including Constitutional Illusions and Anchoring Truths, The Touchstone of the Natural Law, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Beware of Those Whose Demands for Social Justice Will Only Bring About Slavery. Hadley, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me, Todd.
First of all, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. You know, it's Ringo Starr, Dick Armey, and I are marking our 80th birthdays today. I think we were separated at birth or something. But Ringo got the drumsticks. That's maybe why I have an aversion to drumsticks. Well, thanks so much. But they'll have lots of calls coming in. I'm going to be on a Zoom with my two sons in California soon. But apparently you called in response to this statement we put out on July 4th. We didn't think we'd stir the reaction we did, but on Lincoln and his marvelous phrase about the electric cord that connects the generations through the Declaration of Independence. I gather that's what drew your interest today.
Yeah. These ongoing protests in our street, they purport to be about police brutality and racial inequities. Is there more to these protests?
Well, of course there has. You know, of course, well, you know, you and I have talked about this. It's not the former governor of Maryland got into trouble when he said all lives matter. And of course, the Black Lives Matter don't seem to take account of those far more larger number of homicides committed against Black people at the hands of young Black males. And of course, the Black abortions in places like New York and Chicago that exceed the level of births of Black people. These are self-inflicted wounds. And there seems to be an inclination to put the blame elsewhere and avoid responsibility. But the point about this, it's hard to imagine this to be, understand this to be merely a protest, because no one's really protesting the decision to prosecute those cops in Minneapolis who stood by the killing of George Floyd. This is about something else. And what seems to be generated is simply a hatred of America, a rejection of American institutions, the attack even on members of the founding generation, some of them who did own slaves or were very repentant about it, and sought, in fact, to take the steps to put slavery in the course of extinction. And people forget that there are people in the South, you know, who led the way in manumitting their own slaves, and that slavery, this, as a result of the teaching of all men are created equal, you know, slavery receded from over half the states by 1804. And there was this remarkable resolution passed in 1775 by slave owners in the southern part of Georgia, Darien, Georgia, putting a resolution saying that this slavery existing among us is utterly incompatible with those principles we are proclaiming now in the right of people to be governed with their own consent. And we here resolve that we'll do our utmost to end the slavery among us, to free our own slaves, and to try to put the former slaves into a condition of safety, along with them and other members of the community. So people seem to, what seems to be lost here is a sense that this was an institution we found among us, that at the founding, one of the complaints later on was that those founders from the South were just as bad as those founders from the North. This is the complaint of Alexander Stevens, the vice president of the Confederacy, in his famous Cornerstone speech, that those founders from the South also accepted the notion that slavery was incompatible with natural law and natural right. And so they made an accommodation which slavery would be given some protections, but under the conditions in which it will never be endorsed in the text of the Constitution. The steps were taken to bar the import of slaves from abroad after 1808, and of course to bar the expansion of slavery from within, so that Lincoln, looking back later, would say all the signs of this, what the founders did, were using covert language, never endorsing the institution, putting restraints around it. All of these signs were signs to discourage and compress, not to endorse and promote. And that sense of things, that historical sense of things, the principles at work in that founding generation, even though they found themselves with slaves, the principles were just seemed to be lost in this just uncalibrated hatred being expressed here of the American founders and the American founding.
You say that we are hearing a revival of the argument made by Chief Justice Taney.
Oh, yeah.
What was that argument?
The argument was that when the founders said, when they said the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, of course, wink, wink, you know that they simply meant all white men, all people like us. In fact, with Justice, this is the line that Justice Taney made in the Dred Scott case. Remember, the holding of that case was that we can't take this case because blacks could not be citizens of the United States with a standing to present a case in the courts of the United States. So as the Chief Justice said, everyone who understood the country then knew that blacks were considered to be a servile population, bearing no rights that whites were obliged to respect. And so what all men are created equal had to mean was that all white people, all British subjects living in America, were the equal of British subjects living in Britain. And Lincoln sort of skewered that one, you know, and he said, oh, but by this construction, and he said, I quoted the line, not only black people, but white people outside Britain and America were not spoken in the Declaration of Independence and what all men are created equal. So Lincoln said, the English, the Irish, and Scotch, along with the white Americans, were included, to be sure. But the French, Germans, and others who came later, they're all so gone to pot along with Stephen Douglas's inferior races. But of course, you know, we've heard the argument, people that, well, of course, they proclaimed all men are created equal, and yet look at this, so many of them own slaves. That's true. But at the same time, slavery disappeared from the northern states, and even the people who were slaveholders understood that there was something wrong with it, and they understood that they were going to be putting slavery in the course of extinction, and their hope was that it would simply, this before the intervention of the cotton gin, there was hope it would be economically unproductive and infeasible, something we learned later was certainly not true. Slavery was quite adaptable as an economic system and would have held on longer. But what that founding generation showed was that even these people from the South were sheepish about it, did not put up a moral defense. The moral defense didn't come into the 19th century, where people try to make the case, like John Calhoun, that slavery was a positive good. But it's understood even by the founding generation of the South that there was something wrongful about it. And so some of them, like George Washington, made provision to release their slaves at the time when they died. Thomas Jefferson, of course, was the oddest case. He said that, you know, I tremble for my country when I believe that God is just and his justice will not sleep forever. He knew there was something wrong with all of this, yet he himself could not, you know, was too dependent on the luxury and the sustenance provided by his own slaves. So that what falls to Jefferson is what you'd understand as, we'd understand as St. Paul's lament. I know the law, but somehow my members cannot come into agreement with it. I can't summon the nerve to do what I'm obliged to do. And yet we have those so many handsome examples of so many people who did the other thing, who manumitted slaves, which is why there's so many free blacks in the American South. There's a case that one slave owner cited by Kenneth Stamp in his book, The Peculiar Institution, who said, if slavery were such a good thing, I'd be willing to choose it for my own family, but I'm not, and therefore I'm obliged to release, to free the slaves I own now. The movement was fed by the fact that there's so many slaveholders who, of course, if you know, had sexual congress with slaves, which would break down the notion that they thought they were of another species. But this sentiment was alive at work in the South as well as in the North, and that helped pave the groundwork for the changes to come. But so it's just not accurate to look at this and say, yeah, you see, if they really meant it, they would have freed all their slaves at once. It was a more complicated situation than that. Many things were getting in the way. But to take this sweeping line is just to ignore the force of the moral argument that was made against slavery. The depth of that argument, it was just incompatible with that notion of governed by consent. You know, as Lincoln said, the question is the black man a man? If he's not a man, then anyone who is a man may do with him what he wishes, treat him as a species of property. But if he is a man, then my ancient faith tells me all men are created equal, that if he's a man, he too has a right to government by consent, to be governed with his own consent. So these people, they just don't seem to have much to take seriously, even if they're even know anything about it, about the deep force of those principles, how they're understood in the South as well as in the North, the many complications that got in the way of moving people across the country toward a policy of emancipation. And then, of course, the complexities that arise later with the invention of the cotton gin and the discovery that slavery was indeed an adaptable system. Maybe we had slaves living out, working for the Tredegar Ironworks in Atlanta, slaves leaving the plantation, working in the factories, and remitting money home. I mean, this was a very adaptable system of labor, and it could have been with us well into the late 19th century if the question had not been precipitated, if Lincoln had not led a national movement simply to restrain the expansion, to restore the understanding that there's something in principle wrong with this, that it is something not to be promoted. And the understanding was if we get people clear on that, then, of course, we could put slavery in the course of extinction. It would then die out more readily. But all this is lost in the hands of people, of mobs, who are apparently quite uninstructed in the history of their own country.
Hadley Arkus is our guest. We're talking about slavery and contemporary calls for social justice. Why do newcomers to the U.S. seem to appreciate the freedoms here more? We'll answer that next.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. classicalspecialneeds.com.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The COVID-19 pandemic has caused many Christians to ask about whether or not the government should be telling the church when and how to gather around our Lord's gifts. In the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness, the Reverend Christopher Thoma takes up this question in his article titled, Executive Orders, Divine Command. To read this excellent article and more about the church's life in the midst of a pandemic, subscribe to the Lutheran Witness today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective, cph.org/witness.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
We're talking to Hadley Arkus, Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College, about slavery and contemporary calls for social justice. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Hadley, why do newcomers to the United States seem to have a sharper sense of what is different about this country?
Well, that is the mystery. I mean, to newcomers, they see it once. They see it once. You don't have to go through... People get access to the vote. That somehow, well, it's Tocqueville. The sense of equality pervades the country, though, that the assumption being that you would have the same standing as other people, and that, you know, it used to be said that there's a pretty clear sense of what a German looks like or what a Frenchman looks like. But the sense took hold very early that we don't have a clear sense of what an American looks like, that America is fed by these different strands of religion and nationality. The Hessians came over to fight in the revolution on the side of George III, and they came to love the place and decided to stay, so many of them. These people could stay, and the sense was you had access to everything you needed to understand if you grasp that point. All men are created equal. No man is by nature the ruler of other men in the way that God is by nature the ruler of men. Men are by nature the ruler of dogs and horses. Where will that be true? Everywhere in the world where that nature remains the same and human beings can be distinguished from other animals. So Jefferson famously said, anyone who denies that would have to assume that the mass of mankind were born with saddles on their back, and a privileged few were born with spurs on, ready to ride them. I mean, people coming from abroad get the sense that there's something in the air about that, that if they simply understand that principle, all men are created equal, no one is by nature the ruler of others, they have the core of the thing. They understand something that was deeply planted in this country, that once they have their citizenship, they do stand on the same plane as other people who are citizens. And it's often thought it's too bad that we require newcomers to take exam, to be study civics and learn something about the history of the country. We don't require the same thing of people who are born here. And after all, we have had the experience of native-born traitors, of people in the CIA and the military who are willing to sell out their countrymen and people in their own units and people in the CIA. And you think, well, why? Perhaps we should have a common ceremony of citizenship, require people who are born here to take the same oath, to face the same question, you know? And, you know, we could say, well, maybe you don't want, I'm not truly committed to this country. And if you're not truly committed, perhaps you should just not exercise the vote perhaps if you're not really committed to the principles of this country, perhaps you're not really ready to defend the rights of other people in the voting booth. I mean, we saw a dramatic example of that in Germany in the 30s. People going to a voting booth, willing to vote for a Nazi party, would remove the freedom of those people in the adjacent voting booths to have their civil and political rights. We might ask of people, before we share political power with you, are you willing to say that you are committed to preserving the same freedoms for the rest of us? And if not, perhaps you could just sort of live here the way other people live here, as resident aliens. You know, you can live here in freedom. You can have the protections of the law. Just may not, claim the rights of powers of voting and shaping the lives of other people if you're not fully clear that you're really committed to preserving this regime and this way of life. But I hope you haven't, as Neil Cosday says, set off one of my oracular detonations with that move. It's a matter of, we raised the question in the past, where people wanted to be citizens of the country, we say, well, is it fair to ask them, are you willing to support a regime of citizens? Do you understand that you may not be free to vote for a Castroite party who would remove these freedoms from everybody else around you? Do you understand that it's quite apart from asking you to make a preference among candidates, we're asking you, first, are you committed to this system of elections, this regime of elections? Are you willing to defend the rights of your people around you to be governed only with their own consent by having themselves a vote? And it's curious how that seems to be slipping away the most gradual way, as we find unelected judges making decisions that remove large and other portions of critical decisions from the hands of elected representatives and removing them from those responsible officials, removing them also from the citizens of this country. Tocqueville warned about this, about that. He said that despotism may not arrive with the blowing of trumpets. It may come to us just in the most gentle way as you remove more and more decisions from the hands of people who bear a direct responsibility to the people whose lives are at stake.
Why have attempts to liberate man to bring greater social justice so often led to large-scale violence and ultimately authoritarian government?
Well, this is, I think you're picking up in a line from Calvin Coolidge, and I mentioned in that piece of mine when he was reflecting on, he said, there's something arrestful about the Declaration of Independence. We say all men are created equal and we have the right to be governed by the consent of the governed. He said, there's something that's final. He says, no advance, no progress can be made beyond those points. If anyone wishes to deny their truth, the only direction which he can proceed historically is not forward, but backward to the time when there was no equality, no rights of the individual, no rule of the people. Well, you see this at work, with socialist countries. You saw it with the Russians and the Yugoslavs, with under Tito and others, that, my goodness, if we want to bring about an equality of result and the distribution of the social product, and the people who keep getting the way are those smallholding farmers and those bourgeois businessmen who think that they start in business, they risk their own property, they have a right to the fruits of their property. We just have to start removing that. We just have to tax them at a level that takes most of it away. And in fact, what we discover is the recognition of the Soviet Union and other communist countries, then that if we give these bourgeois people and the smallholding farmers the freedom to vote, they're going to use their powers to bring back these bourgeois parties with their defense of private property. But even in this country, as I said before, now we find there's an attempt to try to enlarge shale deposits, our access to oil and to move oil and natural gas. We find unelected judges, district courts imposing nationwide injunctions to remove this decision from the hands of elected officials, of judges responsible to no one. The companies can resist these decisions, but it's going to take vast expense and many days and a couple of years, and they don't think it'll be warranted to impose those costs on the people who've invested in their companies. And see, little by little, in this way, people want to impose a result, and they think they have that social justice in here is not in giving people as much freedom from encumbrances to engage their own efforts and their own genius. But we have the result that we want, and we can't allow that result to be undone by the fact that so many people just attract more notice and more support and take a larger role in the marketplace. More people want to buy Apple products and make Steve Jobs an extraordinarily rich man. We just can't put up with that. So we either have to strike at the freedom that allows him to do things like that, or decide on a scheme that would just take most of it away from him, and perhaps remove from some people the incentive to engage in that kind of work. So the sources may be fed by envy, but Calvin Coolidge caught is that so often it comes along with the need to remove the freedom of people to engage in their own work and their own inventiveness, or to receive the fruits of their work. So one way or another, it requires more coercive measures, more controls over the economy and over our daily lives. And at some point also, it means removing the freedom to resist these kinds of measures through free elections and in the voting booth. There are all kinds of, now we see a rich assortment of devices by which that thing could be accomplished. But Coolidge caught the core of it. One way or another, these people are going to achieve that more exacting equality and lift mankind up to those new plateaus of material well-being, and are impatient at doing that, will want political controls to do it, not to rely simply on the play of freedom in the market or in society, but political controls. And those political controls, of course, will come with the distinct erosion of freedom. So people who are doing these things are not, he said, progressives. They're reactionaries. These ideas are not more modern, that they're more ancient than those of the Revolutionary Fathers.
Hadley Arkus is our guest. We're talking about slavery and contemporary calls for social justice. I wonder if that's what he means when he says these leaders of the mobs fly under false colors as progressives.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow, epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow, across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Hadley Arkus about slavery and contemporary calls for social justice. A little bit later, Kristen Day, Executive Director of Democrats for Life, will join us. We'll talk about the Democratic Party and the Hyde Amendment, which is safe for another round of appropriations, but maybe not in the future. Then Wesley Smith will be our guest for a conversation on two topics. We'll talk about the quality of life ethic in medical care and the ethics of blocking puberty. Hadley, before the break, you were talking about that these movements may be perceived as progressive, but they're actually reactionary, removing freedoms, more control, more authoritarianism. Is that what you mean when you say these leaders of the mobs fly under false colors as progressives?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I think they're doing something advanced, something to liberate. Think about a deeper liberation of human beings, deeper than achieved so far with sexual liberation, deeper than achieved so far with laws that took all kinds of restraints, on the decisions that people could be made in hiring and firing and small businesses, large businesses, small businesses, private clubs, removing so much of the freedom that was once taken for granted in this country. But we want to do more than that to make sure we get the right outcomes, the right racial outcomes, the right, as though we know what exactly the right income is that everybody should be receiving. And all this is done for the sake of achieving a more demanding social justice. And they really are indifferent to the fact that it may take authoritarian measures. They themselves, through the willingness to invoke violence, to destroy the businesses of other people, the businesses established through the work, through the engagement of the savings and the accumulations of the private property of these people, as though this was nothing. It meant nothing to them. They don't have respect for it, and their very willingness to use violence for the sake of intimidating people in public office already indicates a state of mind radically at odds with the notion of government by consent, an arrangement in which, as Lincoln used to say, bullets are displaced by ballots. After all, the willingness of the South, of the secessionists, to take up arms to overthrow an elected government indicated the most radical rejection of government by the consent of the governed. And when you're attacking a government of free elections and imposing these policies by force, you are striking at the very principle of government by consent. And of course, what's the principle that lies at the heart of that? What are you striking at? All men are created equal. No man is by rule of the other men, in the way that God is by rule of men, and men are the rulers of dogs and horses. And so, as Lincoln said, it is should not be a surprise that the same people who are willing to take up arms to impose a judgment by violence, use violence to intimidate the public or people in office, that this thing came in 1861 from the very people who were unapologetic, quite explicit, in their willingness to make slaves of other men.
With only about a minute here, Hadley, why do you think so many of our leaders and fellow citizens support these reactionary movements?
Because it's amazing. I think what's happened to education in this country, I doubt that very many of them have had serious discussions, ever encountered anyone who might have a different view of abortion, about removing the protections of the law from human beings who are very small, or just ruling them out of the circle of rights-bearing beings. I just doubt that most of them have had any serious education in this serious understanding that went behind this notion of government by consent and the principles of the rule of law and the free institutions. For them, these things are slogans, perhaps something read on the backs of cereal boxes, but it probably is a measure of the serious erosion of what has been taken as higher education in this country for the last 30 to 40 years.
Hadley Arkus is Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College. He's founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding, architect of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act, author of several books, including Constitutional Illusions and Anchoring Truths, the Touchstone of the Natural Law, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, Beware of Those Whose Demands for Social Justice Will Only Bring About Slavery. You'll find a link to it and to the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding at issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Hadley, thanks.
Thanks very much, Todd.
Kristen Day is with us on the other side of the break. We will talk with her about the Democratic Party and the future of the Hyde Amendment.
Our life together as the church after COVID-19 will bring new challenges. For example, we might be tempted to skip the regular gathering of God's people because we're more comfortable streaming it on Facebook instead. May it not be. Join the Reverend Dr. Mark Wood as he explores this theme in his article for the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness titled, Gathering Again, It Will Not Be the Same. Subscribe at cph.org/witness, The Lutheran Witness, Interpreting the Contemporary World from a Lutheran Perspective, cph.org/witness.
timeless truth that prepares scholars to serve their neighbor in all of life through their various vocations. This is what scholars receive at Wittenberg Academy. If you are looking for a solidly Lutheran online education for your child, consider Wittenberg Academy, where doctrine is sound, academics are rigorous, and relationships are genuine. We offer full-time, part-time, and diploma track options to meet your child's Lutheran education needs. We partner with brick-and-mortar schools and homeschools. You can find out more at wittenbergacademy.org.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.